And we are joined by Michael Helleck, who's always spinning records. But it's true. It is. Summer in the city, and it's damn hot. Michael, President and CEO of G&O Inc., thanks for joining us.
Yeah, man, it is. It's steamy out there. I just talked to somebody who got back from 2 weeks hiking in the mountains, and they're from here, and they say, man, I got off the plane, and it was like I got kicked in the teeth. And I said, you know, it's not usually how you explain the humidity, but it is a blanket. I actually like it. Not a lot of people do. I don't know. I find, you know, it gives me a, exotic still. Because I grew up in New York, when it's hot and there's palm trees, I could be wearing a suit. I could be, you know, on talk radio, and I still feel like I'm on vacation. Everyday vacation.
There you go. There you go. It's all about perspective, right?
It's all about perspective. That's why I keep my rose-colored glasses firmly strapped to my head.
No doubt. Well, I want to start this way, Michael, because I got a bunch of texts from people this morning. You know, because we send out that you're going to be on. They want to know whether or not you reconstituted those meetings as you had in preparation for the Super Bowl.
Yes. So, yes, we did it due for Essence. So those meetings have continued going on at City Hall. It was always the plan under Joe Threat. I think the question is now what we're going to do going forward, like what the next benchmark is for the meetings.
Well, they have a number of recommendations, and I would say that they're not exaggerating. The interstate is filthy again.
Yeah.
I drove through the Carrollton interchange the other day. It was absolutely disgusting. In fact, I saw more garbage in the Carrollton interchange than I did in 15 days in Croatia. In a basically a 200-yard trek.
Yeah.
The truth be told, yeah, I didn't see any garbage in Croatia, so it would have been in the first 10-yard trek of the Carrollton interchange. But, you know, it just, you know, part of the issue is we've created a new expectation for people, and if they're not experiencing it, they're going to let us know, right?
And that's fantastic because, you know, the truth is, I wouldn't say this out loud or say it to hundreds of thousands of listeners, but the Super Bowl created such an intense focus and such a hard deadline that it created an atmosphere that it is harder to keep up that urgency and get people to return my phone calls in the same way before as after. So it's happening, but the pace has kind of ratcheted down a little bit. And I honestly think, Newell, that even as we continue to try to address things like the garbage, and please send me your list of what people are texting to you because I'll get on it, that for the next mayor, there has to be an organizational and cultural obsession with this stuff, and we just have to make every day the Super Bowl because we've seen it can work. One of the things that we're going to talk about today, I hope, is how we just came out in front of Charleston to be the number two best city in America for visiting per travel and leisure. There's no doubt that the Super Bowl, along with other things like Taylor Swift and Mardi Gras, were part of that. And so it does pay off benefits. And so we just have to internalize it and make it part of, make it normal and not exceptional. And we are still meeting, but it is a little bit harder outside of the Super Bowl context right now is just the reality.
I did my monologue on being number two, and, you know, I thanked organizations like yours and Greater New Orleans, Inc., and a lot of folks in the hospitality industry, restaurant industry, coming together, the city, with this focus. You know, the first impression is the lasting impression, and you've heard me say this before, that's human nature. And you create momentum from the very moment people get off the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we want them focusing on all the great things that we have to offer here, not garbage, right? And it's historically been a problem for us. And that trek from Louis Armstrong to downtown New Orleans historically has always been a problem, both in Jefferson and in Orleans, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's something that I think we need to be more mindful of, because that's where it all starts, right? And
if that start is
a good, fresh, vibrant one, they're less likely to see some of the warts. We all have warts, and you know, and focus on the positive.
It's true. It's why having that new airport, which you know, I still think is a lovely, wonderful airport, being generally well maintained, is so critical. And yeah, you know, we had this obsessive focus on the ride into town during the Super Bowl, with the lights and the garbage and the power washing, and it just needs to be continual. Because you're right that I know that when I visit cities, even though I know that it's unfair because I fought the fight on this side, I'm judging it from how it feels driving into wherever I'm going. And it's hard to come off that initial feeling. Agree completely.
Yeah. Let's jump on the big, beautiful bill. A lot of positive things that are in that. And one really important one, I had an opportunity to talk to Guy Williams about it, and Steve Scalise mentioned it while he was on with Scoot yesterday afternoon about the improvement in our share under Gomesa. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is a big deal. The big, beautiful bill, which actually feels like a big overstuffed burrito. It's got so much in it. One of the things that our delegation, led by Congressman Scalise, were able to get into it is that they were able to raise the cap of what we can get in terms of our share of offshore oil and gas revenue to be dedicated to coastal restoration. The total amount for the four Gulf states used to be $500 million per year, and now that's been raised up to a total of $650 million a year. And based on what we expect Louisiana's share of that to be, it'll be roughly an extra $50 million a year for every year for the next 10 years, so close to $500 million that we can then reinvest in coastal protection. So it's a real win for us, and it kind of shows one of the benefits of having a state which is so over-indexed in terms of our influence in D.C. right now with the Speaker, and then with Majority Whip Scalise, and others, like Congressman Carter on the Democrat side.
Yeah, I mean, didn't get much talk about that provision, but that's a huge win for the state of Louisiana, no doubt.
Yeah, we've been, you know, the best thing that we could get would be to get that 37.5 jacked up to 50%. That would be like that. That would be the one that would give us the most over time. But second best to that would be what we did, which is just increasing the hard dollar cap, so we get more of that. And look, it makes sense. We lead the nation in energy production. I sent you over. I just found out that we're now going to be the leading importer of natural gas into Germany, led by Venture Global out of Plaquemines. So it just makes, you know, kind of reasonable and strategic sense for us to get more dollars to protect our populations and to protect these assets.
Let's talk about that for a moment, this announcement with Venture Global. That is huge, right? I mean, it's what we were all hoping and praying for to happen, is that one of the large country members of the EU would make that linkage to Venture Global.
Yeah, it is. When Venture Global got started, it was before the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So the primary target was Asia and trying to get countries in Asia like China off of coal and onto natural gas, not just to support American companies, but better for the environment than coal. Then Putin decided to invade Ukraine, and that really upset the structure of the power economy in Europe, because previously, or to that point, many of the nations of Europe, like Germany, had been getting most of their natural gas from Russia, from Gazprom. That was part of an intentional strategy called Ostpolitik, where they were trying to basically have economic ties with Russia with a sense that that would make Russia behave better as a neighbor. That was shown to be not just untrue, but quite the opposite, that they were actually subsidizing the Russian war machine. And so now there was an opportunity, not just for economic gain, but for geopolitical security, to switch these nations like Germany onto American sources of LNG. And that's what's happening now. And so it's you know, really good news for Venture Global, really good news for Plaquemines and the state. But at a national and at an international level, it also means that our allies are now interdependent in getting their energy from each other instead of subsidizing the enemy.
Yeah. And obviously, under this administration, it is something that has been fostered, not so much under the previous administration. And so they're feeling better about the climate and the landscape in order to get this accomplished.
That's right. There's obviously a more supportive regime under the Biden administration. I mean, under the Trump administration. Under the Biden administration, there was actually a moratorium on natural gas. It made no sense because even if you go back to Obama, natural gas had been touted as the bridge fuel. It didn't make certainly didn't make national security sense. And so we're really glad that now there's a recognition that LNG, done appropriately, can be a job producer and a wealth producer at home and also provide security and stability in places like Europe. And just so people are clear about the importance of our region for this, well over 60% of America's natural gas is now exported out of Louisiana. So we are the taproot for all the natural gas that's going around the world, and that's something that we should be very proud of and something that we should try to protect, for example, by reinvesting these Gomesa funds.
Let's pivot. Noir and New Orleans Rise. This is a new event that you guys launched. Tell us about it.
We're really pleased about this. This is a venture that's meant to support black entrepreneurship here in New Orleans and the region. Venture Voir brought 10 VCs, angel groups, and other investors from around the country for a tour of standout black-led tech startups in greater New Orleans, ones like Obatala Sciences, led by my friend Dr. Trivia Frazier, or Drums, which are headphones and earpieces by a local audiologist, Dr. Lana Joseph. Damon Burns, who was my first employee when I came back to Louisiana, has now moved on to much better things, has something called Munivestor. It's a financial marketplace platform. There's CodeGig, Callan Francis doing an AI platform, and many, many others. And it was capped off by Savitri Wilson-Taylor, who is the first black female founder to raise $35 million. And the important thing in this, and what I said in my remarks, is that it's not just that we are kind of doing something new here or talking about the future. The first female millionaire in the country was an African-American woman, a black woman from New Orleans. This is something that's not widely known, but Madam C.J. Walker is recognized everywhere as the first woman, and she happened to be a black woman from New Orleans, to be a self-made millionaire. She had a hair care and cosmetics empire. And so when we're talking about supporting entrepreneurs of color for reasons of economic growth and mobility and wealth creation, this is not some pie-in-the-sky thing. This is recognizing that given New Orleans' particular history with so many free blacks in the community, that this is just our heritage and we're going back to it. So it was an exciting event and felt like we were kind of coming full circle.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I don't know what it is about down here, but we in many respects, you've heard me say this before, we almost resent millionaires. I don't care the gender, the color, the whatever. It doesn't matter. The more we have, the better off we're going to be, because they're all great corporate partners. They give back to their community. And actually, the more diverse that we can have of millionaires, that's even an added feature and an added benefit, because whether we would agree or not, there is a like micro economy amongst races, right? There, where there are certain products that are promoted just for this race or that race because of differences between us, but we would want to leverage and take advantage of all of that, correct?
Yeah, you want to. And when you look at those cities that have really done well over recent decades, Atlanta is probably the easiest example, Houston as well. It's because their business community is diverse and wealth creation is happening across a diverse population. That's kind of what you're trying to shoot for, and that's what we're trying to have happen here in the greater New Orleans region.
Absolutely. Good for you guys. From snow to go, this was an interesting story and some interesting stats.
This one is fascinating. There's a lot being reported right now. This was an Axios piece, but that a lot of Northeastern kids are heading to the South for large state schools. LSU saw a nearly 500% increase in attendance from snowbirds over the past 10 years. I read some stat that I think that LSU, the last class was 37% out of state, I believe. And this is fantastic. It's good for the school in terms of the diversity of their student population. It's obviously very good financially. And it shows that we are doing something right in terms of providing real value to students who are now beginning to look at these schools and saying, I'm going to have to pay a lot. I'm not going to be able to say a lot because I'm going to be censored. And the weather's lousy. So why don't I go down south where I can get a great education for less money, maybe have more intellectual freedom, ironically, a more liberal environment in that sense. Oh, and by the way, it's gorgeous. And so, you're seeing all of the southern state schools, a lot of the SEC schools are booming, and I'm excited that LSU is part of that because it's going to make LSU a better school in every way.
Yeah. Michael, let's last talk about cruising into high gear, the Blue Bike Program. Last time I was was paying attention in the city, it almost seemed to me like blue bikes were disappearing. Are they making a resurgence?
Well, I think that I share your observation that the blue bikes are disappearing. And I think that one of the problems with the program has been that they have slowly been disappeared. and so I think that there's two things that are going on. This is a replenishment. These are going to be, a lot of these will be e-bikes, which are what everybody is driving now. So hopefully those bike stands will get filled up again. But then the other side of it, and this is something that I don't know about, but I'm just going to say it, is that we need to make sure the program is managed correctly so that the bikes are recollected. But part of it, too, gets back to the issues that we have with appropriately managing our challenges with vagrancy and homelessness. You can see in some places, I'm thinking about one camp that I know of down in Crescent City Park, which looks like a bike shop. And I think what's begun to happen is that a lot of residents, after they've lost their bike or had it stolen, rather, are now kind of taking the blue bikes as their own. They're kind of borrowing them permanently because they've lost the one that they paid for. And so I think it's really important that we replenish the bikes, and I'm excited that 2,500 new e-bikes are coming online. But we also have to make sure that they're maintained and that individuals' private bikes, as well as the blue bikes, are protected, and that we don't have a trade of them being taken, chopped up, sold into recycling shops, because that cascades back and makes the whole program not viable over time.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed to be popular at first, and then you'd go by the racks, and a little bit more of them were missing, and then a little more, and then a little more, and it was like,
yeah,
okay.
I tell you, like, if you want to see a bike culture, you know, my wife's Danish. You go to Copenhagen, the privileging of bikes is incredible. The most dangerous streets to cross in Copenhagen are the bike lanes, because they'll be going 30 miles an hour, side by side, talking to each other, and, you know, it's pedestrian beware and car beware. The cars, there aren't many cars in the city because the bikes are so pervasive, the public transport's so good with the subway and the buses, even the water taxis. So people tend to walk or bike, and it's fascinating to see how when that becomes systematically and culturally the norm, it can really work well.
Yeah. Got to get to a break. We'll be right back. We are visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. Stay with us, folks. Welcome back, folks. We are trying to hook up with Knox Ross, Chair of the Southern Rail Commission, but I know that Michael knows a lot of what's going on with this subject matter. So, Michael, a lot of conversation in and around rail along the Gulf Coast. Interestingly, the other day there was an article in the paper about how popular the Mississippi Gulf Coast, the Alabama Gulf Coast is, and we always knew how popular the Florida Panhandle Gulf Coast is. So it looks like it might be coming at a great time.
Yeah, you know, I don't know exactly what the cause is of the, you know, the exact causes of all the popularity of the Gulf Coast, but there does seem to be a lot more buzz now about all the locations across it, you know, Gulfport, Ocean Springs, past Chris Jan, of course. I guess it's accessible. It's fun. They keep adding amenities. And, you know, and we know that Mobile, I have to give it credit, it's one of our great, you know, sister cities and competitors. You know, they keep doing better and better. They just rejuvenated their downtown. And so I think people are finding in these days where people are belt tightening a little bit that it just makes sense to make a little getaway over to the Gulf Coast, catch a show, stop at Bucky's, get some beef jerky. And so the fact that we're announcing that the Mardi Gras Express is coming back is just good timing.
So the Mardi Gras Express is going to go from where?
So it's going to go from New Orleans, and then it's going to have four or five stops on the way to Mobile. Let me see if I have them in front of me. I don't know exactly where they are, but I think they're Gulfport.
Now it goes from New Orleans to it leaves New Orleans at 7:35 a.m. Bay St. Louis, it arrives at 8:59 a.m., then Gulfport at 9:31, Biloxi at 9:55, Pascagoula at 10:29, and then Mobile at 11:18. That's not a bad ride.
Perfect. Thank you.
it could one accident, and you will beat them by the train, I can promise you.
Yeah, no, if you have to go out there, I mean, this is by far the more relaxing way to do it, and there's going to be a free Wi-Fi, regional cuisine, moon pies and zaps. There's a bar. So it's not a bad way to do it. In fact, it really begins to make me personally think about maybe if I want a long weekend, going out and doing it this way now instead of having to drive and tempt the tunnel.
And it leaves, I should say, they have an afternoon time that it leaves as well, where you leave at 5:31 New Orleans and arrive in Mobile 9:14, and it has the same coming back westbound. It has a morning leave time and an afternoon leave time. So it's very interesting.
I
drove to Bay St. Louis for the July 4th weekend. Some friends had us as their guest over there, and there was an accident. And what usually is an hour drive was about an hour and 50 minutes as a result of that accident.
Yeah, it's not worth it. And I hope that the route works, because if it does, then it starts laying or creating more political support for us getting the New Orleans-Baton Rouge route going again, which is something that, you know, I'm kind of embarrassed about how long we've been working on that. It's well over a decade in partnership with my cousin Adam Knapp when he was running BRAC, and John Spain at BRAF. But I could slowly see this coming back. And eventually you'd be able to get from New Orleans all the way to Disney World or all the way over to Dallas. And for if you have the right timing, being able to be safe, know your exact timing, use the internet, have a drink, take a nap. You know, there are going to be use cases where that's going to be very attractive. Plus, it's just much less expensive.
Yeah, and, you know, what's interesting is a lot of the infrastructure is there already, right? The track's there.
Oh, yeah, the track is there. You need to do some improvements. You need to make some safety additions. But the right-of-ways, which are the key things that are really difficult to obtain, are already there. So it's really a matter of, you know, political will. There was a while, and we kind of dealt with this, Newell, back in the Jindal days, when trains were seen as part of this, like, creeping, like, European socialist thing that we had to stay away from. And, you know, it never really made much sense. Either trains are a good alternative for people, and they make sense to add diversification and take load off our highways, you know, or they're not. And hopefully we can evaluate them in that more objective context now, instead of wondering if they're going to turn us all into croissant-eating communists or something.
Yeah. Well, Michael, you would know better than I, because you've traveled Europe more than me.
Communists, what? Yeah.
You've traveled Europe more than me, but the European countries that don't have a robust rail system are very jealous of the European countries that do, right?
Taking the train around Europe is fantastic, because not only is it reliable and relatively inexpensive, but it takes you right into the center of town. And that is the fundamental advantage of train over regional air, excepting the price, is that, you know, if I'm going to go and take, you know, the Amtrak, use the Best American example, from D.C. Into New York City, I'm going from the middle of town, from Union Station, right up in the middle of Manhattan. If I'm going to fly, even if I fly out of DCA, well, DCA is great, but I'm going to still end up in, at best, LaGuardia, and that's another hour, you know, into town. So, you know, trains can make a lot of sense. They're efficient. They get you into the middle of cities. But, you know, we culturally as a country have been car dominated for a long time, and we've built up infrastructure and, you know, habits around that. So you've got to just kind of, you know, move at the speed of trust and demonstrate that it can work, and stay away from expensive boondoggles. And one of the things that always used to bother me, Newell, is when people wanted to know, when are we putting in high-speed rail between New Orleans and Baton Rouge? And I used to always say, we're never putting in high-speed rail between New Orleans and Baton Rouge, because it's 84 miles. It doesn't make, you know, we're not talking about traversing China here, right? And yeah. So it's also just about, you know, not over-promising.
Well, you got to be smart about where you're going to put it, because it's not cheap either. The asset, the building, the infrastructure is not cheap. All right, we got to get to a break. We'll be right back with Michael Heck. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc. Michael, I know you guys and a number of others have spent a boatload of time working on the medical corridor, and the mayor the other day vetoed a $20 million expenditure from the city in to Tulane University that's redeveloping Charity. What impact does this have? I know we were starting to build up some new momentum. We had lost momentum. Your thoughts?
So would you like me to answer this question as Radio Michael or as Exasperated Michael?
How about a combination of both?
Okay, here it goes. Well, Newell, I think fundamentally it's going to have no impact because there's 7-0 approval of this on the council, and so they're going to override the mayor's veto. So I don't think that it's going to have any material impact on the momentum of what I think is arguably the most important project, not just economic development project, but project for the future vitality of downtown New Orleans. So I'm not fundamentally worried, but you know, at an exasperated level, come on. I understand the political context, but this one is just.
So you do understand?
Jumps the shark. Well, it's about the Wisner money and who controls it, and about the council versus the mayor, and all of that kind of stuff. But
what about everybody else?
Yeah, exactly. What about the 360,000 other people? They need to see Charity redeveloped 20 years after Katrina. They need to see the medical corridor succeed. They need to see Tulane succeed. Need to see LSU succeed. And so, you know, somebody said to me today, they were talking about it, and they said, man, I was really surprised to see the mayor veto Charity. And I looked at them, and I said, when you get in the shower in the morning, are you surprised that you get wet? And they...
See, that's something I would say.
Oh, goddamn! That must be water. I mean, so anyway, it's sad that we have to even go through this, but it's not going to be material because the council has co-authored the resolution, and I think everybody recognizes what Joe Geruso said, which is that the veto doesn't make sense for New Orleanians or the city's future health, and that, you know, all seven were co-authors of the ordinance, so it's gonna get through.
Well, that's good. That's good news. I mean, you know, we've talked about credible leadership, and there's a difference between leadership and credible leadership. In credible leadership, you're always working to establish, create, and foster momentum. You know, and you try to figure out these differences in a back room with the legislative body to not, you know, create another high hurdle that people have got to get over, you know, another exercise in futility that we got to get by, because all of that just sucks the life right out of a city.
It does. And it's actually, I mean, it's truly corrosive. And I'll give you another example of this. I was, as everybody knows, we're very involved in trying to get the Louisiana International Terminal done in Violet and St. Bernard for the benefit of St. Bernard and the region. And it's a complicated project, but done correctly can really benefit everybody. There's a small but loud group of opposition. And I was talking to a real estate broker in the parish, and she said, Michael, you know, this opposition to the port, they're doing it by trashing the parish and saying how it's going to destroy the parish and nothing's ever going to be the same. She said, it's killing my real estate business because there's so much negative messaging out there. All the success that we have had since Katrina with the Sold on St. Bernard program and the Builder Bonaparte, it's actually undermining it. And so this narrative component of leadership, the storytelling, the positive energy, the vibe, as the kids say, it really does matter. And so it might seem like this is just a little petty dispute over a fund that's over 100 years old, but really it's about the tone and the character in the city and the way it's received. And so, yeah, you're right. It's not good in the broad sense because it's picked up around the country, and it's just kind of repellent.
Yeah, and you know what's really interesting is that part of that small minority, at one point in time, they were in the majority because there was something in it for them. now they're the vocal minority. It's funny how that works, right? Yeah.
it's funny how you could be for something before you were against it.
Yeah. I just hope somebody, you know, because I'm ready to call them out. I mean, I'm like done. You know, it's like, come on, really, folks? I mean, y'all want to play all of the other St. Bernard residents to be idiots? You were for this when you were at the negotiating table.
Yeah,
but you were.
I think that
you were greedy. It didn't go your way. Now you're against it. Go figure.
Go figure. You know, Newell, the truth is stubborn. It will.
It is. Absolutely, no doubt about it. Michael, as always, thank you so much for joining us, and stay cool, my friend.
Thank you, and tell Chris thank you for his inspired choice of "Come on, Ride the Train." I mean, that was just pitch perfect for not just the topic, but for this show and its host.
We'll be right back. Let's end this before it gets any worse here, guys. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Charlotte Voicy, the executive director of Tales of the Cocktail Foundation.